Bristol Bay's summer fishing season brings with it an influx of thousands of fishermen and processor workers into small communities around the region. In the letter, the Cheryong Tribal Council and the City of Dillingham said that there was no way to limit their community's exposure to the virus, even with the current requirement for processors to submit quarantine plans for their workers. In the letter, they write, quote, "There is no way to prevent a potential mass disease situation when a few hundred people are in close proximity with each other," unquote. Thomas Tilden is the first chief of the Cheryong Tribal Council. He says that if the state allows the fishery to go forward, a comprehensive and effective plan must be in place to protect residents, something that he hasn't seen so far.
We had better have a real good plan up front by all of us to make sure that, you know, we're not exposed to this virus.
The region has limited healthcare resources for its permanent residents. The city and tribes say it can't handle additional outside patients. Quote, "We must decide now whether those resources should be devoted to current residents or instead to a temporary labor force," unquote. The state has designated fishermen as critical infrastructure and required processors to submit health and safety plans to the state in order to operate. The city and tribe wrote that while they appreciate that processors have shared plans with them, they do not want to rely on corporations to ensure residents' safety. They emphasize that no regional entities have the ability to limit the movements of fishery workers. Tilden says that's already apparent.
They're already coming here. And just one of them brings the virus. I mean, it's not going to be good for us.
The letter also urges the governor to act immediately. 2 weeks ago, the Cheryong tribe declared a state of emergency and disaster for the tribal community. The city council passed a resolution Thursday restricting travel into Dillingham. There are no reported cases in the region as of Tuesday morning. For Alaska's Energy Desk in Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Thank you very much, Izzy. For many fishermen, including those who fish Bristol Bay each year, the first they heard of the letter asking Governor Mike Dunleavy to consider closing the bay to salmon fishing this summer was after the letter was posted on the National Fisherman Magazine's website. The letter was posted at the bottom of a short article about the community's concerns for the safety of their residents in the wake of the massive influx of fishermen and others that are needed to harvest and process the world's largest run of red or sockeye salmon. Here in Kodiak, 40-year Bristol Bay fisherman Mike Frigero said he totally understands and respects the position of the City of Dillingham and the Tribal Council. He said, "We are all concerned about the safety of the community and agree that the existing medical facilities are inadequate for this event." Frigero was speaking yesterday afternoon following the publishing of that letter. Frigero is a former board chairman of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. He said, quote, "Over the years attending many meetings, gatherings, and events, there's a lot of great people up there, and we wouldn't want any bad things to happen to them or their community," unquote. Frigero said, "This is a good time for everyone to take a day at a time and for all stakeholders to get together under one coronavirus mitigation plan." This is a developing story, and we'll have more as we become aware of it. And speaking of fisheries in Bristol Bay this summer, COVID-19, the pandemic, has caused a major shift in the way the Kodiak processors are doing business and, as we heard before, is jeopardizing the Bristol Bay summer fishing season. For the most part, because of their connection to the global market, local processors have been ahead of the game in taking precautions to prevent the spread of coronavirus into Alaska communities. Paul Lumsden, the Kodiak plant manager for Trident Seafoods, says because China is a major buyer of American seafood, they were on high alert early on when the virus first appeared in Wuhan last winter.
And when cases started coming to the United States, it was mission critical for us as a primary essential business to put in place protocols and to do everything we could.
Now Trident is implementing a number of protocols in an attempt to balance the processing workload with preventing the introduction of the coronavirus to the island, our island. Lumsden says employees have their temperatures tested every morning before clocking in for work. Employees' meal times are staggered, and employees are spaced out while eating in the gallery to maintain social distancing. Employees with above normal temperatures are required to quarantine for 14 days, said Lumsden. The plant has so far seen three crew members with elevated temperatures. All three are currently on day 7 of the quarantine. Three other employees with flu-like symptoms have already been tested for COVID-19 and came up negative. That's according to Lumsden. The Alaska Groundfish Data Bank has been coordinating with processors to limit the number of new staff being brought in from off-island for the upcoming season. Here's Executive Director Julie Bonney.
In terms of additional workers coming into town, at this point, across all the processors, which include North Pacific, International Seafoods, Icicle Seafoods, Ocean Beauty Seafoods, Pacific Seafoods, and Trident Seafoods, we don't expect any additional workers coming into town for the months of April and May, except for a few small exceptions. So I think the exceptions is about 8 workers in the month of April and less than 15 additional workers coming in May, bearing no unforeseen circumstances.
Other protocols are in place to make sure harvesters don't have physical contact with plant employees.
Our fishing vessels are not allowed to come off the boat now. When they deliver, they get handed a letter from me explaining the scenario. They get handed the fish ticket paperwork through a drop bag, a line on a pole. Crew members, skippers aren't allowed off the dock. We have drop zones for groceries and parts. So if someone needs to deliver something, they don't even come onto our property. They deliver it to a drop zone. Dock foreman picks it up and we crane it down to the boat. So we've cut off all access to the plant, offices, dock. We're communicating via phone or email. We've tried to mitigate all of our exposures.
With the summer fishing season on the horizon, harvesters are now having to catch up to processors by implementing their own mitigation protocols. Mike Frigero, who's the owner of the fishing vessel Miss Gina, says the state is likely to adopt universal mitigation plans for catcher vessels, rather adopt one universal mitigation plan for catcher vessels. Frigero warns that for now, vessels should not be heading for Bristol Bay until there is a formalized plan in place. And it's worth noting that he spoke in the morning yesterday. I talked to him yesterday afternoon about the letter from the city of Dillingham.
I would say with great confidence that the primary message right now is stand by, do not go to Bristol Bay, and that we are developing a plan, regionally specific enhancements to the unified plan, and we're hoping to be published as an addendum to this plan and incorporated by reference again into the mandate. If those two things happen, then all of this becomes enforceable by law to some degree, and at least enforceable. And so we're looking for fishermen that are looking to go to Bristol Bay to wait until at least May 1st with a possible extension to May 15. And early arrival is probably the biggest threat, or early uncontrolled arrival by outside non-locals into the watershed is probably the biggest issue that we're trying to prevent at this time while we get our plan formalized.
Lumsden, Bonney, and Frigero, along with Alaska Pacific Seafood's Matt Moyer, were guests on yesterday's edition of The Lowdown. Today we had the doctors, which I have a report here in just a moment. You can submit your questions by email to our program, Lowdown, L-O-W-D-O-W-N. Get the lowdown on what's going on with the coronavirus pandemic and what people in Kodiak need to know to make their lives work around it. That's lowdown at kmxt.org. Or you can call us 486-3181. You can do that during the program, before the program, or anytime. We're happy to take your questions and see if we've got somebody who can answer them. Alaska's coronavirus count is at 226 as of today. The first case spread into rural Alaska in Bethel earlier this week. Kodiak has still not seen its first confirmed case, but the community's doctors are spending this time to prepare to test and treat Kodiak's residents if it does come.
every day allows us to be one step further on when we get our first case.
That's Dr. Steve Smith, who's the chief of staff at Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. His counterpart at Kodiak Area Native Association, Dr. Elise Pletnikoff, says it's likely that Kodiak will see cases in the future, but they continue to urge the community to follow social distancing guidelines to keep the number of COVID-19 patients as low as possible.
We've had very low testing rates due to a low number of testing kits available to us in the outpatient facilities. And we have more tests available, and I think with higher testing rates, there's a good chance that we'll see some positive results. I think there's a good chance that COVID will come to Kodiak, but with our good social distancing, we hopefully will be able to eliminate or minimize spread in our community.
But Letnikoff anticipates that Kodiak will start getting access to rapid testing kits as early as next week. COVID rapid testing for COVID-19 test, which basically swabs the collection samples from the inside of your nose, can be performed on island, but they still have to be sent to labs to the mainland to get the results. It's unknown how many tests Kodiak will have access to, but Pletnikoff estimates about 50 tests to start. Smith says that while they would like to test everyone, they will only have the resources to test people who are symptomatic, so they can decide how to best treat them. In other news, Governor Mike Dunleavy has vetoed nearly all of the additional ferry funding added by the legislature. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, it's unclear whether the Alaska Marine Highway System will receive federal stimulus funds available for rural mass transit.
With a stroke of a pen, the governor erased nearly $13 million of funding approved by lawmakers. Here's the governor explaining his line item vetoes on Tuesday.
You're going to see the Alaska Marine Highway System was the amount of money that the legislature put in, which was considerable. We vetoed it back, but there's still more money in it this year than there was last year going into next year.
He's correct. His cuts leave about $54 million for operations, which is about $8 million more than in the current budget that ends in June. But last year's budget came with another kind of cost: long service gaps and fewer ships running, which led to the shutdown of all but a single ferry route after the sole mainliner in service broke down. Transportation Commissioner John McKinnon told reporters that once the COVID-19 restrictions are lifted, five ships will be back up and running, and he says this budget will improve service.
You know, what we have operating next year will be considerably more than we've seen in the last couple of years.
The governor also nixed nearly $17 million for adding crew quarters to one of the Alaska-class ferries. These newest ships, the Taslina and Hubbard, are only equipped to run as day boats, which restrict which routes they can service. He also vetoed a line that would have required the state to deposit the proceeds from the sale of marine highway assets back into the agency's vessel replacement fund. But he did leave about $4 million to overhaul the ferry Aurora, which was laid up last winter for cost-cutting. DOT confirmed Tuesday it intends to bring the ship back into service. Coastal lawmakers expressed dismay at the cuts. Senator Jesse Keel, a Juneau Democrat, says the vetoes will hurt. Legislators had hoped these funds would be used to shore up and repair the aging fleet.
We are seeing statewide what happens when you shut down movement and what that does to an economy. We saw that last winter when the ferry schedule was built on a single point of failure and it failed. And when this virus lets Alaskans move again, we need a ferry system that moves people and commerce, and this governor is just against that. It is a vision for a collapse of the economy in coastal Alaska.
One of the themes of Dunleavy's veto speech was the opportunity to backfill state funding cuts with federal stimulus money approved by Congress responding to the COVID-19 pandemic. There's almost $29 million available for Alaska transit systems operating outside Anchorage and Fairbanks. Robert Venables, executive director of Southeast Conference, a regional civic and business forum, says it's not clear whether any of that funding will be steered toward ferries.
I do know the delegation announced increased mass transit funding for the state, of which quite a few million dollars could be available for the marine highway system. I think DOT has a lot of discretion on how that is distributed, but there's certainly an opportunity there.
So far, the Dunleavy administration hasn't tipped its hand. In a statement to Coast Alaska, DOT says it's working with the Federal Transit Administration to determine how the funding is to be allocated. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Thank you very much, Jacob. It's now 21 minutes past the hour. Time for Fish Radio. Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Alaska's fisheries keep the port of Seattle afloat. Updates after this.
Grundens urges everyone to buy seafood directly from community-supported fisheries at localcatch.org. Your CSF purchases will help U.S. fishing towns thrive. Grundens, supporting fisheries around the world since 1926.
If not for Alaska's fisheries, the Port of Seattle would not be what it is today. How important is Alaska to its bottom line? An economic report reveals that Seattle is home port to about 300 fishing vessels. Of those, all but 74 make their fishing living in Alaska. The Seattle-based boats harvest Alaska pollock, Bering Sea crab, flounders, salmon, and many other high-value species. In 2017, fishing vessels that moored at one of Seattle's three terminals and operated in the Alaska fisheries generated gross earnings of more than $455 million, or nearly half of the gross earnings from Alaska's fisheries. That represented 44% of all gross earnings from the North Pacific fisheries. The boats fishing in Puget Sound and other Washington areas earned $26.6 million at the Seattle docks. An estimated 7,200 jobs were directly associated with commercial fishing at the Port of Seattle in 2017. Of that, 5,100 jobs were on fishing vessels, and all but 200 operated in Alaska fisheries. Factoring in all segments of commercial fishing at the Port of Seattle, fishing activities generated more than $671 million in business output in 2017. The activities also produced over $13 million in state of Washington taxes. Most of the seafood produced in Alaska comes to Seattle or Tacoma ports in containers. Nearly 4 million 20-foot containerized vans were handled there, directly supporting almost 15,000 jobs. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMSI instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, I'm Maggie Wall. Let's look at the local weather and have some community announcements, why don't we? Right now in Kodiak, fair and breezy. At the airport, it's 35. Here up on Signal Hill, it's 33. Forecast calls for sunny skies with a high near 41. It is definitely sunny outside. Very nice outside, but boy, don't be wearing sneakers or anything like that because you'll be slopping through the water and getting those puppies wet. Tonight, mostly clear skies with a low around 32. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies continuing with a high of 42. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low around 30. Friday, sunny, high near 44. Saturday, rain, high near 44. And then we have lots of rain, chance of rain, chance of rain, all the way through the long-range forecast, which runs through Tuesday. Although we're looking at daytime temperatures of 46 and 47, and nighttime temperatures of 38 and 39. So not bad weather, even if we have rain. Looking at the almanac for today. Today is Wednesday. It's the 8th day of April, 2020. It happens to be my sister's birthday, so I'll say happy birthday, Sue. She sends me lots of notes and makes fun of bears and thinks that I have stories. She loves my bear stories. Okay, so also today, sun did come up. You can look outside, and that's a fact. It came up at 7:17. Tonight, 9:08, it sets. Tomorrow, 7:14, it will rise. That will give us 13 hours and 51 minutes of daylight today, which is a gain of 4 minutes and 57 seconds. Looking at the marine forecast for Kodiak, let's start with the synopsis for that North Gulf Coast area and Kodiak Island waters. 990 millibar low, 700 nautical, a 990 millibar low, 70 nautical miles southwest of Middleton Island, is moving inland near Yakutat at 1,001 millibars by this afternoon. The associated front continues to weaken through Thursday morning. High pressure builds across the Gulf on Thursday afternoon. For Chiniac Bay, our local waters, we have small craft advisory in effect for today for high winds and high seas. Mostly winds, though. Northwest winds 30 knots, becoming west 20 knots in the afternoon. Seas are at 5 feet. Tonight, winds continuing but backing down to 20, diminishing to 10 late in the night. Seas down to 3 feet. Tomorrow, west winds 10 knots in the morning, becoming variable less than 10 knots, and seas down to 2 feet. Just a note here, the long-range forecast for the Kodiak Chiniac Bay waters, we're looking at seas 6 and 7 feet on Friday and Saturday. For Marmot Bay, also a small craft advisory in effect for today, northwest winds 30 knots, seas west 20 knots late in the day. I think I said that wrong, didn't I? Okay, I'm going to start Marmot Bay over again. Marmot Bay, there is a small craft advisory in effect for today. For today, northwest winds 30 knots, becoming west 20 knots late in the day. Seas are 7 feet. Tonight, west winds 20 knots, seas 5 feet. Tomorrow, west winds 15 knots, diminishing to 10 knots in the afternoon, and seas are at 3 feet. For the Shelikof Strait, also has a small craft advisory through tonight. West winds today 30 knots, gusting to 45 knots out of bays and passes in the morning. Seas 7 feet. Tonight, west winds 25 knots, seas 5 feet. That's for the Shelikof Strait. So, once again, our local waters does have a small craft advisory in effect. The next tide for the Kodiak area will be a high tide at 3:12, 9.10 feet. Low tide will be at 9:06 p.m. at minus 0.58 feet. High tide for the west side, which is the Euganic Bay area, 3:39 this afternoon, will be at 17.34 feet. Low tide will be at 9:46 tonight at minus 2.38 feet. A quick reminder here that tomorrow we will have at noon the Emergency Services Director live update. We've been broadcasting those live for the past couple of weeks, and that information will be available, and it'll adjust the news schedule just a little bit. And one final reminder, don't forget that your KEA membership things are due on the 17th. They will be picking them up at the post office on the 17th, so probably want to get them in, the ballots in, just a little before that. The annual meeting has been postponed indefinitely, but the election goes on, and the deadline is next Friday. That's it for Island Messenger. Coming up next, we have the Spotlight